AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
I'm Ed Donahue with an AP News Minute. Sources tell the AP the head of Customs and Border Protection is being forced out of his job. The shakeup comes as Republicans are likely to take control of the House in January and were expected to launch investigations into the border. Here's the AP's Jackie Quinn.
Commissioner Chris Magnus has been on the job for less than a year, but he tells the Los Angeles Times he was told to resign or be fired. Customs and Border Protection's been criticized for its treatment of migrants and for the sharp spike in border crossings, up 37% over the year before, surpassing 2.3 million.
That number is more than twice the highest level during Donald Trump's presidency in 2019. The numbers reflect deteriorating economic and political conditions in more countries, relative strength of the U.S. economy, and uneven enforcement of asylum restrictions. I'm Ed Donahue.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Americans are applying for student loan forgiveness under the new Biden administration plan. In states like Wisconsin, borrowers will want to be aware of some potential tax implications. Mike Moen reports.
The Biden plan provides loan forgiveness of up to $10,000 for federal direct loans and up to $20,000 for Pell Grant recipients. Cheryl Rapp with Wisconsin's 529 College Savings Program says the relief amounts could be taxed in 13 states around the country, and Wisconsin is among them.
Congress expanded the federal student loan forgiveness tax exemption when it passed the American Rescue Plan last year. But that still means the state has opportunity, depending on their laws, to actually tax the money that was forgiven.
It's unclear yet if Wisconsin will join 37 other states in aligning its tax code with the federal government to allow for the exemption. Rep says not making any law changes could result in a borrower being taxed between $300 and $1,000 at the state level. Meanwhile, she says it's important to be on the lookout for scams during the application process.
There's scammers that might be out there of, hey, I can help you with a fee, forgive your loans, or consolidate your loans and all that stuff.
And Rapp says it's also important for future borrowers to still be mindful of predatory lenders.
Avoid those that are really high interest rates or have big additional costs.
And for both federal and private loans, she says never borrow the full amount you qualify for if you don't need it. And Rapp says savings programs like the one she works with can help avoid these problems if investments start early. For low-income households, other family members, such as a grandparent, can make contributions to keep the account growing. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
And for Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
This local musical interlude is brought to you by Max Inc. Radio. Kelsey Miles. Listen to Max Inc. Radio every Saturday and Sunday, 6 p.m. to midnight. Download the podcast at maxincradio.com. We are local music.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which was audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
Oh. We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
We have to really understand how critically important a time this is. Time for talk is over. The time for action is now. Because my voice has always been and will continue to be for people who don't have a voice.
Tune in to the Earl Ingram Show every Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Only on WAUK 540 AM, 101.1 FM, The Shaw.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ed Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Here's a fun fact for you. The average chameleon can point their eyes in two different directions. On the other hand, the average human can't. So unless you're a chameleon, there's absolutely no way you can focus on texting and driving at the same time. So don't do it, unless you're a chameleon.
Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager, Learning the Lingo.
GOAT, G-O-A-T, acronym, stands for Greatest of All Time, as in spaghetti sandwiches for dinner. They're my fave. Dad, you're the GOAT.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
You are listening to pre-recorded content on Devil Radio. To see our station's entire live lineup, check out DevilRadio927.com.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning and welcome to our weekend review, our analysis, and our discussion of the most significant stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Thank you for joining me and my ever-faithful producer, Kelvin. We're also going to be taking your phone calls for the next 2 hours here at the studios of WAUK Waukesha, the Shaw, in downtown Waukesha, at 540 AM, 101 FM. That phone number is 844-967-2789. For the next 2 hours, as we do every Saturday morning, talking about those big stories in law, government, and justice in America. No exception this morning. An aggressive but achievable agenda. An academic syllabus for you once again this morning, focusing on some of the big stories, including those breaking just as late as yesterday, that affect who we are in America and who we are going to be in the future. This morning, our syllabus includes, as it always does, some analysis, some review of the important stories, the things that happened on this day in history. I'm going to chat about a couple of other major stories having to do with events in New York and then also in Washington, D.C., the appointment and the activities of an independent monitor in the litigation involving the Trump companies in the state of New York. And then late yesterday, we'll spend a lot of time this morning talking about this news of late yesterday, having to do with the appointment by Attorney General Merrick Garland of a special counsel to oversee two of the major investigations in which the former president is now involved, along with others. We're going to be talking about that at great length later this hour and into the next hour. After that, we're going to chat about a couple of other cases pending right now in the federal courts and other courts around our nation, including the continuing prosecution of the Oath Keepers, a fellow named Stuart Rhodes. That's going on in the U.S. District Court in the District of Columbia. And then also, we're going to be chatting about other cases pending around the nation, including matters that affect deeply what we do here in the United States of America. In addition to that case involving the Oath Keepers, also going to be focusing on the DA's prosecution, again, another criminal case in New York City against Alan Weisselberg, more specifically against the Trump Corporation, in which Alan Weisselberg is testifying this past week, continuing into the coming week. We'll talk more about that. And then finally, rounding out our two-hour period this morning, we're going to return to the Supreme Court and talk about some major significant events happening out of that high court, including the president's request that the court review this judicial review of his loan program, his loan forgiveness program. We'll talk about a case involving Google and some other events involving the justices of our United States Supreme Court all today, all Saturday, November 19th, here on Morning Cannolis. It is the 323rd day of the calendar year, 42 days remaining in 2022. Let's begin with that that analysis. Let's begin with a review of the significant events in history on this day, November 19th, including at the very end of this description, a major event in American history that will also animate our discussion of these other very contemporary matters on our agenda for the day. Way back in 1703, November 19th, in France, this was the day that the so-called Man in the Iron Mask, a political prisoner who is famous from French history and legend and stories and brought even more contemporarily into our public imagery and notions, he died at the Bastille today in 1703. 1794, many years later, during the tenure of the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, the very first Chief Justice, his name was John Jay. He negotiated something called the Jay Treaty, after his name, of course. That was with Great Britain. It was helping to mend relations between the United States and the British, again, following the vestiges of our own Revolutionary War, as you know well. Things did not go well after that. We still suffered the War of 1812. But at that time, John Jay, the first Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, also involved, interestingly, in what we would today regard as a State Department function, engaging with our former enemies, the British, in trying to and successfully negotiating a treaty that accomplished some mending of relations with our former adversary. So that also today, 1794, November 19th. 1969, jumping ahead dramatically. 1969. Today, sports fans, was the day that Brazilian football, our soccer player Pelé, scored his 1,000th goal. We refer to it as soccer. The rest of the world calls it football, of course. Pelé scoring his 1,000th goal today, 1969. Much more gravely, but importantly for Middle Eastern events, it was today in 1977, after the Arab-Israeli War that occurred from about 1973 to 1974 or so, Egyptian President Anwar Sadat, who would later be assassinated, began his first visit to Israel. And there he proposed a peace plan to the parliament, known as the Knesset, there in Israel. Again, a softening, a warming of the relations that has continued to this day between the Egyptian government and the Israeli government. Also, of course, a part of that, the Camp David Accords under former President Jimmy Carter. That happening 1977, November 19th. A number of other events happening this day in history. It was this day in history that pop duo Milli Vanilli, remember them, became the first performers to be stripped of a Grammy Award. They were awarded that award for being the best new artist. Turns out, in fact, they were not that. It was revealed, as many of you recall, that they did not, in fact, sing on their debut, their 1989 album called Girl, You Know It's True. And so, again, pop culture history today in 1990, that happening on November 19th. Other significant issues. Much more seriously, 2002, the United States Senate, in the wake of the 2001 attacks on our nation, approved the creation of the Department of Homeland Security. The House had passed some legislation prior to that, about 1 week earlier or so, establishing at that time this major new agency responsible for keeping us safe and secure, as do others. A workforce at that time of 170,000 employees put in place way back in 2002. All of those significant events in the history of our world and of our nation. And the most significant of all of those, it was today in 1863, that a president named Abraham Lincoln delivered something that we know today as the Gettysburg Address. It was the dedication of the National Cemetery, as you all well know, in Pittsburgh during the Civil War. We know in particular that about 4.5 months after the Union armies defeated the Confederacy at the Battle of Gettysburg there in Pennsylvania, that happening in July of that same year, 1863, the president took the train from Washington, D.C. to the National Cemetery at Gettysburg and delivered that speech. A significant thing about that, sometimes lost to time and space, but pretty much confirmed by a lot of historians at the time, that probably President Lincoln was ill during his delivery of that monumental, that landmark speech on that day. He commented to some of his cabinet-level companions who had accompanied him there to Gettysburg that he felt weak and dizzy, and one of them actually noted in some contemporaneous notes that the president's face had sort of, as he described it, a ghastly color, almost haggard. Well, it turned out that on his return to the White House, he developed a rash and subsequently was diagnosed with a mild case of smallpox at the time, and so many historians conclude that it was highly likely that the Gettysburg Address was delivered as its order. President Abraham Lincoln was in the a period of smallpox infection, a small footnote to an otherwise grandiose, very significant event in our history. And so today, when we recognize and acknowledge this major event happening in 1863, November 19th, a bit of that from this major address, the Gettysburg Address. This is what Abraham Lincoln said to us, words that reverberate to this day, and are also going to animate some of our discussions this morning about contemporary issues. This is how Abraham Lincoln delivered his words, his thoughts that day to the folks assembled on that great battlefield. He said, "We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a resting place for those who here gave their lives that our nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper," he said, "that we should do this. But in a larger sense," Lincoln went on, "we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or to detract." All these words of Abraham Lincoln. He went on to say this: "The world will little note nor long remember what we say here." Well, it turns out that that wasn't exactly true. But nonetheless, he went on to say this: "But it can never forget what they did here. It is for us," Lincoln said, "the living, rather to be dedicated here to their unfinished work, which they fought here and have thus so far nobly advanced. It is for us," he concluded, "to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take," and here is the great important language for us, not just in the 19th century, not just in the 20th century, but also in the 21st century, as we think about who we are today as Americans, "we take increased devotion," Lincoln told us, "to that cause for which they," the soldiers, "gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation under God shall have new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from the earth." Once again, not died in vain. This nation pursues and it perseveres and continues to be a place in which the people, not only in their elected representatives, but by virtue of their own actions, remain strong and confident so that our nation does not perish from this earth. All those words from our president, Abraham Lincoln, 1863, November 19th, this day in history, delivering the Gettysburg Address on that day. So remember that important history on this day as we move now into some of the major events of this past week in our nation that survives since that time. And again, those words reverberate this morning because many of them have reflections in what's going on in our courts today. This focus on preserving our republic and ensuring that our rule of law, the pursuit of justice, our advancement of justice in America continues. Let's go first to New York, which we have reviewed and focused on in past broadcasts. We know well that in recent times, a few months ago, the attorney general there, her name is Letitia James, filed a massive piece of litigation in the state court in New York City, involving an alleging deceptive and changing valuation of properties by the Trump Organization. Right after the break, we're going to talk more about that case and the significant thing that happened in that litigation just this past week involving an independent monitor, the first of two major cases this morning that we're talking about here on Morning Cannolis. Continue with us as we discuss these major issues.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
My husband said to give our house more curb appeal. So I started painting. Then I went on Google and looked up the meaning of curb appeal. It said to make it more nicer. So I called Replacement Window Center, and they put in new replacement windows.
Get free installation and 0% financing for 18 months. Free installation and 0% financing. Hurry, call now.
Replacement Window Center. Our name says it all.
WAUK will be broadcasting the Waukesha Christmas Parade live, and you can become a sponsor. Call us at 262-232-8164. Sponsorship includes an on-air interview during the live broadcast of the Christmas Parade. A portion of the proceeds goes directly to the Waukesha Memorial Fund. Please call at 262-232-8164. That's 262-232-8164.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. A blend of clouds and sun this afternoon with a high of 28. Southwest winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Lows level off around 23. Tonight, mainly cloudy. Clear skies tomorrow. Daytime highs approaching 36. Partly cloudy skies Tuesday with daytime highs approaching 41. 45 Wednesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 10 degrees.
The Shaw 101 FM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
And we're back. This is Morning Cannolis, our weekend discussion of major stories in law, government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Thank you so much for joining me on this Saturday morning. As always, Calvin, my producer, and I are taking your phone calls at 844-967-2789. This morning, in the wake of our recitation of the wonderfully inspiring words of President Abraham Lincoln at the Gettysburg Address, talking about the preservation of our union, the promotion of things right and good in America, we're talking about what's going on in the courts once again. We began to discuss just before the break this continuing litigation, civil litigation pending in New York State. Under state law, Letitia James, the attorney general there, has brought this sweeping piece of litigation against the Trump companies, alleging that they engaged in some deceptive and changing valuation of properties, matters related to finances again. And many of those allegations set forth in her omnibus civil complaint. She is also, in addition to seeking other remedies, asking for about $250 million in damages from the Trump family, and also seeking a judicial order that none of the Trump family members, including Donald Trump and his children, ever again be permitted to serve on corporate boards in New York State. All that by virtue of her authority as the chief state law enforcement officer in the state of New York. Along the way, Letitia James also asked early on for the appointment of what's called an independent monitor. We're going to talk in just a moment or so about special counsel in another big case that broke just yesterday. At least the news of that broke just yesterday, but this is an independent monitor. It sounds somewhat similar, but a slightly different function. The request from Letitia James was to appoint someone, an independent person, to monitor, to oversee the Trump real estate empire, all of these holdings, while this litigation goes on. So there are no further examples, no further engagements of any transactions that are the subject of the very litigation itself, and that at the end of this, if indeed she is successful in pursuing her claims and getting a judgment against the Trump properties, there is some monies to recover. And so she had asked that a monitor be appointed by presiding Judge Arthur Engoron, E-N-G-O-R-O-N, restricting the company's ability to sell assets and change its corporate structure and other things. Basically not doing the day-to-day administration of the companies, but ensuring that with respect to big things, real estate transactions, other things having to do with major asset holdings, transfers of those those monies, that it be monitored, overseen, and checked on by this monitor. Well, we know again that previously this Judge Engoron did grant that request and said he's going to do just that. He's going to appoint someone to serve in that capacity, which he did. And along the way, the former president, President Trump, and his family objected to that and filed an appeal with an appeals court judge. Again, this is all New York State. Judge Angela Massarelli, about a week or so ago, said that while that appeal is pending, she is not going to overturn, not going to upset Judge Engoron's decision to impose this special monitor responsibility upon the Trump companies. And she also set a hearing date of later this month to review all of that. But in the meantime, that goes ahead. And so the significant news of this past week is that Judge Engoron, as a part of his previous order, didn't in fact appoint someone whose name we have seen, we know in other settings. Her name is Barbara Jones. She is a retired federal judge, and we know her from an awfully wonderful and stellar career on the federal bench. Most recently, she's also been involved in some privilege reviews, some document reviews involving cases focusing on Michael Cohen and Rudy Giuliani. She has served even in the wake of her retirement in this very, very significant and very, very important role, once again called upon by the sitting judge, Judge Engoron, to serve as this independent monitor to continue to review the major events, major activities, major transactions of the Trump Organization during the pendency of this litigation. And so this past week, not only announcing that former Judge Barbara Jones is going to be serving in that role, but also Judge Engoron explained what the expectations of his are with respect to the parties. How are they going to engage with this monitor? He said this. So the parties shall promptly meet with the monitor, again, Judge Jones, and shall cooperate with the monitor to design processes and procedures that provide the monitor with access to all information necessary to effectuate the monitor's responsibilities, the judge wrote. They're responsible for informing her, for example, in advance of any shifting assets within 30 days of that movement. Let me know about those things, is what the judge directed the parties to do with respect to Judge Jones. That basically guarantees that they can't form a corporation in another state. That is, the Trump companies funnel money outside the purview of the New York Attorney General's lawsuit, otherwise ensuring that the monitor has responsibility as oversight for what goes on. The company must also respond to the monitor's requests no more than 5 days after they're made. Whatever she says in terms of directions, information requests, those have got to be responded to within 5 days, a very short period of time. Also required to comply with every request by the monitor for information that Barbara Jones, the retired, now called out of retirement judge, once again to serve in this role as independent monitor. That going on in New York State Court under, again, Judge Arthur Engoron, and now also Judge Barbara Jones serving in that all-important capacity. Again, that's an independent monitor inside the state court. A little bit later in the second hour this morning, we're going to chat about other things going on in New York, in particular the criminal trial going on with respect to the corporation, the Trump corporation itself, and the testimony provided by its CFO in recent days and weeks. But before we get to that, let's turn now to the other significant appointment made just this past week, just yesterday, as a matter of fact, announced yesterday by the Attorney General of the United States of America. His name, as you know, is Merrick Garland. We know as well that Merrick Garland has been overseeing generally through his work and other works the focus on both the Mar-a-Lago issue and also January 6th. When we come back after this coming break, we're going to talk about this major appointment that Merrick Garland made just yesterday of a special counsel to oversee and work on those investigations as all of these investigations proceed. Stay with us right after the break. We're talking about that this morning on Morning Cannolis.
So all you folks out there, if you haven't registered to vote, register to vote. Get ready to vote. There are so many things on the ballot this November, at our freedom, our liberty, and our way of life. But we'll get to all of that this evening.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m. on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
I'm Pat Kreitlow from Up North News. On an earlier edition, we talked to three women, med students, about whether they're going to stay in Wisconsin to practice medicine.
All this Roe v. Wade stuff, and now OBGYN's hands are so tied. I don't want to go through 12 years of training to have some person that didn't do training tell me how to do my job.
It is not a binary choice. You're for or against abortion. It is a healthcare decision. We all have those stories, and people want to hear them.
Don't miss the real stories here on Up North News.
AP News. I'm Ed Donahue. President Biden says the U.S. is keeping its commitment to fight climate change and urged other countries to do the same.
At the UN's COP27 summit in the Egyptian resort town of Sharm el-Sheikh.
The climate crisis is about human security.
President Biden says the U.S. investment in green energy pays off in several ways.
We're proving that good climate policy is good economic policy.
He's announced a new regulation to crack down on methane emissions, considered worse than carbon, and renewed the U.S. commitment to cut greenhouse gases in half by 2030.
We can no longer plead ignorance to the consequences of our actions or continue to repeat our mistakes.
The U.S. has invested some $375 billion over a decade to fight climate change. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
With the president in Egypt on Veterans Day, Vice President Kamala Harris laid a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknowns at Arlington National Cemetery. She said the military represents the best of America.
Unwavering courage, unmatched talent, and unshakable devotion. You come from every corner of our country, and out of many, you become one.
Sources tell the AP with a high level of illegal border crossings, the head of Customs and Border Protection, Chris Magnus, has been told to resign and told the Los Angeles Times he will not step down. A survey by AP Votecast shows support for abortion rights drove women to the polls Tuesday. As for many, the issue took on higher meaning, in part because of an overreaching concern about the future of democracy. Voters in Colorado passed a ballot initiative to decriminalize psychedelic mushrooms for people 21 and older, and to create state-regulated healing centers where people can experience the drug under supervision. I'm Ed Donahue, AP News.
So all you folks out there, if you haven't registered to vote, register to vote. Get ready to vote. There are so many things on the ballot this November, at our freedom, our liberty, and our way of life. But we'll get to all of that this evening.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m. on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which is audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP. We're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
Bringing some sanity to the airwaves. The Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
And we are back. We're talking this morning about appointments in the prosecution and the litigation of cases in America. We talked right before the break about this appointment of an independent monitor in New York State in that New York case, civil case involving the Trump organizations. Now we're chatting to the other big news breaking just yesterday, just on Friday, from Washington, D.C. Attorney General Merrick Garland announcing the appointment of a special counsel. We'll talk about that language in just a moment or so. A special counsel with specific responsibility to take over two major criminal investigations involving former President Donald Donald Trump, examining his role in the events leading up to and partaking in January 6th, the insurrection, the riot, the attack on the Capitol that day, and also his decision to retain some sensitive documents at his home in Florida at Mar-a-Lago, about 100 of those classified in nature, tens of thousands of others of those matters subject to the Presidential Records Act, taken from him out of the White House upon his departure in January of 2021. Those two major investigations, for the most part, unrelated to each other, but yesterday, the Attorney General appointing a special counsel to serve in that role. We're going to chat about specifically why that was done and some of the trappings of that in particular. He appointed a special counsel. His name is Jack Smith. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about him in just a moment or so. Longtime prosecutor, incredibly well qualified to serve in this role as special counsel to oversee, to manage, to move forward on these two major investigations. Significantly, at the time that the Attorney General announced this specific and very important appointment among the investigation team, he said that this is going to enable the department to ensure that if there was any concern about partisanship, about political involvement of the department in making decisions, that those kinds of things would not be a part of this special counsel's agenda. And that certainly is true. Specifically, the Attorney General Garland said this. He said, based upon recent developments, including the former president's announcement, he's talking, of course, about Donald Trump, that he is a candidate for president in the next election, and the sitting president's stated intention, that, of course, is Joseph Biden, to be a candidate as well, I have concluded that it is in the public interest to appoint a special counsel. And again, that for the purpose of ensuring that when going forward with the investigation, with decision making, that there would not be a sense of impropriety, that there would be a sense that this is being done without any conflicts of interest, any other concerns about appearances of impropriety, as Mr. Garland said yesterday. We're going to get back to that as I offer you some commentary about this and, frankly, some of the concerns that I have about the messaging going forward from this. But before we get to all of that, let's pull this apart a little bit more. Let's talk about what a special counsel is and is not, because it does animate our understanding of what's going on as these investigations proceed. As we know well, the investigation of the Mar-a-Lago event probably going on at least for a year or so, if not more. NARA, the National Archives, had identified some concerns about not having all the documents it would normally have from a departing president as soon as weeks, if not months, after the president departed the White House. And of course, January 6th, January 2021, now coming up on almost 2 years, 2 years of investigation. And then in the midst of that, the appointment of this special counsel, whose name is Jack Smith, longtime prosecutor, just yesterday. So what is a special counsel? Well, semi-independent, and that's important to understand. It's still a federal prosecutor, still in the employ of the Department of Justice, still getting a paycheck, I suspect, from Jack Smith's history, which is stellar, and a huge amount of experience, a huge amount of background he brings to this. Nonetheless, as a government employee, I know this well, you do not get rich becoming being a part of the federal government and employment. So Mr. Smith is certainly going to be paid by the United States Department of Justice to do that. So not independent in that sense. Staff also supplied, of course, by the Department of Justice, and taking over this group of people who have been investigating both of these cases for at least the past year, if not much longer than that. Normally, United States attorneys or the head of the Justice Department's criminal division, also other divisions inside main justice, can oversee criminal investigations. And of course, all of those folks, including U.S. attorneys and supervisors, are subject to the department's regular chain of command. And that, of course, is required to ensure that there's consistency in litigation, in prosecution, and the department, on behalf of the people of America, the top leaders of the department know what's going on. Under extraordinary circumstances, that's the language of a regulation, or in the case of a conflict of interest, these Justice Department regulations do, in fact, allow the Attorney General to appoint a special counsel. Those kinds of situations might be a case where an investigation could raise the appearance, as already indicated, of a conflict of interest for their department, something that would strike people as being truly conflicting in nature somehow and making it inappropriate for the Department of Justice to continue. Or if there's some other reason that would be in the public interest to appoint a prosecutor, again, this semi-independent federal prosecutor. So those are the two categories under the regulation. Conflict of interest, which frankly is not here. We don't have a conflict of interest going ahead with these investigations, but extraordinary circumstances, and that's what some of the debate is about this. Are there extraordinary circumstances that warrant this appointment? The Attorney General, whose own history on this we'll get to again in just a moment or so, he said yesterday that there are. And again, the predicates for that, the extraordinary circumstances, are that now we have at least two candidates, not formally announced by President Biden, but certainly by former President Trump, likely two candidates, one of those his boss, that is Merrick Garland's boss, and the other being investigated by Merrick Garland's Justice Department. Those extraordinary circumstances, Merrick Garland says, justify the appointment of this special counsel. You recall as well that in 2004, yesterday, Mr. Garland cited the 2024 election ambitions, again, as I said, of Mr. Trump and the president to base this this decision to appoint a special counsel. He said the appointing a special counsel is the right thing to do. Extraordinary circumstances presented here demand it. Special counsels undeniably enjoy some greater day-to-day autonomy than U.S. attorneys do on a regular basis. But again, they have to obey Justice Department policies. They're certainly subject to the oversight of the Attorney General. And on a regular basis, certainly, as we've seen in the past, special counsels do report to the Attorney General, the Deputy Attorney General, whose name is Lisa Monaco, on these kinds of things. They do have protections against arbitrarily being fired. That's a very significant portion of these regulations establishing a special counsel. An Attorney General can remove a special counsel only if they engage in some sort of misconduct. And so that's a very important piece of this, not anticipating that happening, but that's what sort of does separate the special counsels from other leaders and other supervisory attorneys inside the Department of Justice. Significantly, the Attorney General, even under this appointment, retains the power to overrule a special counsel's decision to take a significant step of virtually any kind. That would include, of course, indicting someone, but include pursuing search warrants, doing other things in the investigation of this case. And beyond that, the Justice Department has to tell the Congress if any of that happened, including the indictment of a person. That rule, that provision of the special counsel regulation is there to serve as a check against any abuses to ensure that lawmakers find out that they know what's going on. So, let's talk about some of the aspects of this much in the news. Big question about whether the appointment of this special counsel is going to delay this investigation, leading up to some of my commentary about the important messages being sent about this to the American public. The answer is probably not. In a very real sense, we know, again, that these investigations have been going on for at least one, if not 2 years. Lisa Monaco has talked about that before. The Attorney General has said that no one is above the law. And plainly, we know that there are indeed grand jury investigations convened with respect to both of these matters. Certainly the January 6th matter in particular. We know that there have been people testifying in front of those grand juries about January 6th. So the investigations going on, special counsel will almost certainly inherit those staff. So unlikely this will result in a huge delay. Nonetheless, it's entirely possible that there could be some new hires by this new investigator and prosecutors to work on the case, which could slow it down a bit in terms of that transition. The simpler choice, plainly, would be to keep most or all of those law enforcement officials who are already working on these cases right in place that he is now taking over. Attorney General Garland yesterday said that he emphasized repeatedly that he wanted the investigation to be completed swiftly. He said, "I'm confident," these words from the Attorney General, "that this appointment will not slow the completion of of these investigations. The men and women who are pursuing these investigations are conducting themselves in accordance with the highest standards of professionalism. So some concerns out there about delay, but probably not huge, since, again, continuing investigations already underway. An awful lot of focus also about, is there a difference between a special counsel and an independent counsel? Again, we talked earlier about an independent monitor in the state system, entirely different. Lots and lots of adjectives and nouns here. A special counsel, same as an independent counsel? The answer is no. Independent counsels no longer exist. It's perhaps worth it this morning to do a little bit of history in this area. Late 20th century or so, independent counsels, again, a different name and a different function, if you will, were periodically appointed to investigate certain things, allegations of wrongdoing among high-level officials. And so that included, for example, investigations to the Iran-Contra scandal during the presidency of the administration of Ronald Reagan. Many of you may recall that. Former President Bill Clinton, involved in the Whitewater land deal out of Arkansas, and of course the affair with Monica Lewinsky, that a part of the Starr report. That was also under the independent counsel structure in those periods of time. Congress had enacted that law that enabled the appointment of these independent counsels following what, of course, is the Watergate scandal. And that was, of course, when Richard Nixon had dismissed a Watergate prosecutor in what became known as the Saturday Night Massacre. So in the wake of that, Congress responds and establishes this independent counsel law. And significantly, under that law, these independent counsels, again, no longer in place today, reported, believe it or not, to a panel of judges. Judges were the supervisors of these independent counsels, and they could not be fired by anyone subject to a president's control. So that sounds pretty good. But along the way, the Justice Department, of course, had no say in the investigation's budget, duration, or expansion, staffing, all those kinds of things I already chatted about in connection with this present news. And again, many people at that time thought that's a good idea. It may well still be, as we try to attempt to find some mechanism here to make the independence of these councils truly meaning something. The Supreme Court actually had upheld that arrangement, this independent counsel supervision by judges, a panel of judges. But critics, an awful lot of people out there said that this approach, this structure really could not stand, because there's a possibility, of course, that truly, truly independent prosecutors could be out there making decisions under only the lightest of supervision by a panel of judges. So there was a view developing that this independent counsel legislation would have to go. And sure enough, Congress didn't renew it when the law expired in 1999, right before the turn of the last century here. Instead, what happens is, under Janet Reno, a woman for whom I worked under very proudly over the last couple of years of her administration, the Clinton administration, she issued some internal regulations that enabled special counsels, not independent counsels, special counsels, to remain subject to the supervision of the Attorney General in pursuing these kinds of things. Again, there's an awful lot of history out there, but that's basically some of the history related to this, and that's how we get to special counsel, plainly much more tied to the Department of Justice than would be an independent counsel, which was previously a part of our history. Some notable special counsel investigations that many of us will recall, of course, 2017, the Justice Department, under Rod Rosenstein, the Deputy Attorney General at that point, appointed Robert Mueller, retired former federal prosecutor, former FBI director. He was overseeing the investigation into the Russian election interference and any ties to the Trump campaign. Mr. Mueller pursued that, as we know well. He pursued a related inquiry into whether or not there was obstruction. We'll talk more about that and wrap up our first portion of this special counsel analysis right after this break here on Morning Cannolis.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts.
For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
This local musical interlude is brought to you by Max Inc. Radio. Dana Perry.
What am I fearing? Why do I worry at all? 'Cause I can feel that.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio every Saturday and Sunday, 6 p.m. to midnight. Download the podcast at maxincradio.com. We are local music.
So all you folks out there, if you haven't registered to vote, register to vote. Get ready to vote. There are so many things on the ballot this November, and our freedom, our liberty, and our way of life. But we'll get to all of that this evening.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m. on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Partly cloudy this afternoon with highs around 28. Southwesterly winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Mainly cloudy skies expected tonight. Lows level off around 23. Sunny skies and calm tomorrow. High of 36. Partly cloudy skies Tuesday with highs around 41. 45 Wednesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 10 degrees.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Muskego to Pewaukee, always streaming at waukradio.com.
And we're back. We're talking this morning. Thank you for joining me as we talk about special counsels and this appointment yesterday by Attorney General Merrick Garland of special counsel named Jack Smith to serve in this role to oversee and manage these investigations of the Mar-a-Lago documents matter, also the January 6th insurrection matter. And so just before the break, I was talking about perhaps the most notable recent appointment of special counsel, and that of Robert Mueller, who again began investigation in July of 2016. Focusing again on the extent to which the Russian government was involved in the 2016 presidential election. In the end, Mueller produces an omnibus report finding probably no direct involvement, no conspiracy between those two entities, that is the Trump campaign and the Russian government, but also finding in about 6 to 8 to 10 instances of obstruction of justice in that very investigation by the president and perhaps by others as well. So that, again, that was a special counsel investigation, perhaps most recently in our recollection and our history. The other one that you may also recall is that after Bob Mueller continued, or finished that work, rather, the matter continued because Attorney General Bill Barr at the time then appointed yet another special counsel. His name is John Durham. He continues to serve in that role, although coming to an end of that. He was a U.S. attorney in Connecticut. In October of 2020, a former Attorney General Bill Barr asked special counsel, now special counsel, John Durham to look at the genesis of the investigation of the Russian interference and all the matters that Bob Mueller had looked at, basically the investigation of an investigation, and commissioned Mr. Durham, again at that time the U.S. attorney in Connecticut, to review all of that. Durham brought three different cases. Two of those resulted in acquittals. One of them resulted in a plea to a fairly low-level charge. Mr. Durham is now apparently writing a report for Mr. Garland about the results of his special counsel investigation. So again, those two fairly recent special counsel appointments, and again, now yesterday, the appointment of a fellow named Jack Smith to be a special counsel overseeing these investigations. What do we know about Jack Smith? We know he comes highly, highly qualified. We know that for a long period of time, he has served in a special court as the lead prosecutor in at the Hague, where he's been this lead prosecutor, special court that deals with war crimes in the Kosovo conflict. conflict of not so very long ago. He ran the Justice Department's public integrity section from about 2010 to 2015. That the section inside Main Justice that handles public corruption, public integrity matters. He knows his stuff well. He began his career in the 1990s as a prosecutor in the Manhattan District Attorney's Office, then moved to a similar job just across the river in Boston, in Brooklyn, rather, where he joined the U.S. Attorney's Office at that time. A number of supervisory positions inside the Department of Justice, again, including this very important stint as the chief of the Public Integrity Section. I worked on a great variety of cases, many of those involving public corruption. So hugely, hugely experienced, hugely qualified to take on this role, and someone who plainly will jump into this feet first and undeniably pick up with the important work that the litigators, the investigators have done up to this point. I'm going to comment more upon all of this and give some additional perspective on the announcement and the attempts by the Attorney General, which continue to this day, to restore the integrity and the importance in the minds of Americans about the nonpartisan, apolitical nature of the Department of Justice. I'm going to comment about that in just a moment or so as we think about this news story yesterday and the appointment of now Special Counsel Smith to work on these cases. But before we do that, we do have a caller who's called in. And Kurt, we appreciate your call coming in from Madison this morning. What's on your mind, Kurt?
First, a comment before I ask the question. One is Bill Barr is by far any Boy Scout. I'd say flat out he's a criminal. It started with him covering stuff up for Bush and then again for Trump, even on a monumental level higher than he did before. But my comment and question to you is that I got a chance to hear Ali Bastal on one of the TV networks. And I like him a lot. I follow him closely, as I follow you closely as well. And we spoke about this. But he said, and I tend to lean in his direction, is why didn't he do this 18 months ago? Yes. If 18 months ago was too early, why didn't he do it after January 6th? Why now? It's just another delay. And that's how I see it, until he proves me otherwise.
Right. And so, Kurt, it's almost as if we orchestrated your phone call, because that's a great entree into the comments that I'm going to make. Again, that follow up in part upon the timing of this and the good commentary that's out there. And again, the important thing about this, Kurt, you can call in. We can ask these kinds of questions. That's what America is all about, right? We can accept decisions made by our government, but we can also criticize them and ask good, important questions about things like why now. So let me jump into that, because it really is what I wanted to spend some time talking about this morning. We do know that we are very much aware of the fact that since January 6th that afternoon, that there had been crimes committed. We didn't know at the time about the extent to which it moved up and down at various levels of government. But arguably, at least as you indicated, 18 months, arguably coming up on 2 years since this has been going on. And if the concern was really about the public perception of this being politically motivated, it certainly would strike an awful lot of people, me included, that one might have done this long ago. And again, I say that in part because of the qualities of Jack Smith. To have somebody of that nature, of that quality, involved in investigation in this kind of case from the start would have been and still will be huge. But again, one wonders out loud about why this didn't happen. And there's an answer to that also reveals something about the legitimacy not only of the Attorney General's present decision, but also the legitimacy of questions about timing and about the messages that are being sent. So we know as well that for a very long period of time, Attorney General Garland believes strongly that the American public would in fact have confidence in the United States Department of Justice absent the appointment of a special counsel to do this kind of work. He said the department's ability to navigate this difficult difficult terrain would show the American public that it is now operating above the partisanship that marked the Trump era, and there is acting neither as a weapon nor the enemy of any political party. Those kinds of things coming out of the mouth of our present Attorney General. In his estimation, there was no need to appoint a special counsel to oversee any criminal inquiries into the former president. And so he was on record saying those kinds of things, much to your thoughts and frankly mine as well. Now, what changed that? Why do we have a different perspective now? He says, and we rely on the legitimacy of his reasons for changing his view, is that this announcement by former President Trump, he's running for election, the likelihood that President Biden's also going to run for re-election, places him in a situation where extraordinary circumstances prompt this to happen. Again, my view, not a conflict of interest, but extraordinary circumstances, and that's what prompts all of this. We're going to chat more about this, taking up Kurt's very important question, offering you some thoughts in our second hour about the rightness of this and also some concerns when it comes to the messaging that this conveys to the American public about the legitimacy of...
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
It is the Monday after the first Packers game, and I think everyone right now is licking their wounds.
But I do love that you're leading with The Bears Still Suck as the intro song. I mean, we're already on to week two.
Why are we not good at the season opener?
Listen to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry right here on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always